This is session number 55, recorded on February 18, 2008, side A, and we're wrapping up the first chart, the Bob Dobbs formula chart, subtitled Coevolutionary Anticipatory Mimesis Equals How the Media Archetypes Fit the Battle of Jericho in American Politics. Now, do you want to start off with something?
Yeah. last week, you made a comment of how there's a kind of you can make an analogy between the airplane and the television and the automobile and the movie.
Yeah.
And Nixon, we talked about, is kind of he's the anthropomorphic sociological mask lag. He's the chemical body image for the alchemy of the television and the airplane dynamic.
Right. I think we, since in Finnegan's Wake, Sean is considered the legitimate son of HCE, and Shem is the black sheep of the family.
Uh-huh.
So even though they're twins, and on another level, in Finnegan's Wake, they become interchangeable. In the drift of the chart, the Sean column is more allied to the ISI zone. So the airplane is more aligned to Nixon, and Nixon's up against television, the effect of television.
Mm. And
which is
I think
no
you
battle.
Pointed out that since he was perpetuating or upping the ante in Vietnam, we see airplanes... airplane imagery on the television as the Air Force goes in there to invade.
Yeah, one of the main images of the Nixon presidency is him bombing Cambodia and Laos illegally, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
Illegally, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the war was with Vietnam. Why was he bombing over there? Now, that evoked a lot of protests in 69 and 70, maybe late 69, early 70. I think the Kent State... problem was in May 70, and that was over the announcement of leaking of the Cambodia bombings.
Mm-hmm. I still don't get why
let me just say this so that you see Nixon, a content image of Nixon, he's the airplane guy, bombing people, right?
Right.
And he's up against the fact that television is, by 68, you've got a lot of decentralized tribal groups screaming for coverage. The blacks, the students, the feminists are just starting, and then the third world politics, they're really invading the American living room.
Yeah, why don't you say a little more about why 1968, the year that rocked the world, there were outbreaks of student movements all around the planet, peace movements, student rebellions, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't just in the United States. It was happening in the Soviet Union and Czechoslovakia and Russia and Romania and Cuba and Mexico. It was happening everywhere. What evoked all that activity?
Well, according to the chart, satellite and laser beam are the hidden ground, right?
Yeah.
And the book you read recently about 1968 talks about the use of video transmission via satellite just came in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's talking about the content that happened through satellite. But satellite had been operating as a ground from 57, 58, and now we're 10 years later, and it's now a full-fledged global theater, and a global theater is decentralized. So that the minorities, for example, in the summer of 68, the famous image of the Black Power salute given by the American athletes who won the medals in Mexico, the summer Mexico Olympics, and they raised their Black Power salute, you know, when the anthem was played, their victory anthem, after when they were standing on the podium with their medals. And that was a pretty scandalous image. But you had this invasion of television caused by, in other words, people were becoming more aware of, like the Yippies in the summer of 68, they're saying the whole world is watching. Everybody was responding to the satellite laser beam ground, which was now starting to become figure. And people were becoming conscious of it. and felt that they were in a global village, but you could use television, which becomes the cultural enemy medium against the establishment represented by the airplane and the military-industrial complex, these decentralized groups felt a new power. They could bypass the...
Well, particularly, it was the youth against the establishment.
Well, the youth always grab on the latest medium. And so they were trying...
Well, this probably was... Well, I'm not a historian, but I don't know how many other periods in history when teenagers and 20-year-olds had that much power to disrupt the status quo.
Well, it began with the French Revolution period. The Hellfire Clubs. So there's the newspaper effect. And the Hellfire Clubs were these wild young radicals.
Mm.
That's famous. And you'll take any medium, and you'll find there's always an uprise of youth involvement in it. For example, the 20s was much, in Europe, was much like the 60s. I remember back then, early 70s, LaRouche, his newspaper, New Solidaire, did an article on Frank Zappa. And they described a very similar kind of image of Frank Zappa around this character in the 20s in Germany. He went around the world, or went around Europe, uniting the kids and whooping them up. He kind of had a gypsy image. Now, of course, LaRouche and them, not being that sophisticated about the Zappa world, thought that that's what Zappa represented. But it's an interesting historical fact, it's long forgotten, that there were characters like the image that Frank had, the leader of the hippies and leader of the unwashed, was happening in the 20s, and that was the effect of the media back then. And then you've got all kinds, then you've got the Mazzini and the Young Socialists coming out of Italy in the 19th century, and that's at the time of the telegraph. I mean, we can look at Marx's socialism is coming in under the effect of the global emotion caused by the telegraph. So, yes, if you know a lot about history and politics, every new medium of the last 250 years had a youth movement associated with it when the medium came in. So what's interesting, the LaRouches are talking about a Zappa kind of guy in Europe, but now you have the global theater with the satellite, and the whole world is in touch with each other, and so the whole international motley, as McLuhan called them, of the student class, they felt a kinship all over the world. So they rose up all over the world, and so did the oppressed, the disenfranchised, the peasants of the Third World and the blacks in the United States. They aligned through Castro and other movements all over the world. I mean, that's what Eldridge Cleaver represented, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even Leary got involved with that world. But the thing is, look at that as a new power felt by the young kids who don't have a vested stake in the older media. They subconsciously responding to the dynamics of the newer media.
Yeah.
Now, this youth culture, they probably thought consciously that it was the effect of jet travel. They could fly to London, fly all over the place.
Well, the Chinese couldn't. They were communist, and same thing with Russia. They probably didn't have the freedom to travel, but yet these spontaneous uprisings happened there, too.
Right, and that's the satellite effect. See, the thing is, I'm saying that the kids thought they were united because they could travel easily. In the 60s, a lot of college kids were traveling all over the world and mixing it up, and that was in the 60s, and that was thanks to the jet plane and the airplane. But they didn't know that their inspiration was really being affected by the satellite, and the proof of that is that youth movement sprung up in China. That was the Mao's crusade. And you had the Prague Spring in 68, which was a crack in the Soviet Union. And you had other movements going on in the Soviet Union. So the satellite is the unconscious medium that's inspiring young people. But probably the conscious medium is the television and the airplane. And so the yippies and that kind of consciousness says, let's get on TV and beat up the Nixon image, which is represented by the airplane. So that's the meaning of the television fighting the black sheep, less established, less proper movement coming out of the Shem column is inspired by television, which by that time is an older ground and not that important as much as the satellite effect is. And Sean represents the establishment, the straights, and that their medium is the airplane. So if you go back a phase, you see Kennedy. He's aligned with Hollywood and Marilyn Monroe, but he's up against the Rat Pack. He's sort of hinted to be part of it, but he has to be careful. But the Rat Pack is Frank Sinatra, Peter Lawson, I think, Peter Lawford, and Sammy Davis. These guys are running around Las Vegas and enjoying their cars, souped-up cars with their dames and hints of Las Vegas, mafia people.
Right, so and radio is becoming obsolete art form, so we're getting, Elvis Presley and the early rock and roll guys.
Yeah, that's Hollywood. That's the cartoon, and that is what Kennedy can see as the establishment he's aligned with, but he's up against the enemy medium of the automobile. But the hidden ground is the computer and atom bomb, which went forward with plans to design a Vietnam War, and as some people think, they had to off Kennedy because he was going to frustrate the plans of moving into Vietnam and Southeast Asia. So the hidden ground of computer and atom bomb was the real ground for the Kennedy assassination.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, John Judge tells the well-known story of his mother, who worked in the Pentagon and worked with statistics, and she at some point told him that they planned the Vietnam War and figured, and she did the, she was part of the calculators, they figured that about 50, 60,000 Americans would die in it, and that's what happened. So it's like 57,000 people is the standard figure for the number of American soldiers killed, and that was a computerized projection. So the beginning of the computer as a...
I can't imagine that they had computer modeling that could have, it was that sophisticated back then on such a large scale.
Well, no, they did. You're saying you can't imagine.
No, right.
Well, we're not going by your imagination. These are facts. I mean, John Judge is not making this up. There's all kinds of other stories. You just read any history of McNamara. The computer modeling that they were doing in the Kennedy administration was the management of the planet. It's the locking down the other half of the world government. You know, that's the way, that's
right.
The 1918 to 45 period. Now, satellite laser beam is having its real effects for the HCE intelligence elites from 45 to 60. By 68, the populist effect of satellite is it becomes a globally used environment, which the HCE guys can't control. They can't control the larger effects, what we call the bottom-up effects, in the long run. And the bottom-up effects of that was the tumultuous year of 68. And you have to see that the kids, they just saw television as the medium of choice, as the medium that they could get access to if they created a news event and massaged the news media. And they could, because the news media needed that kind of digression because or distraction, because the news media is feeling itself being obsolete by the computer environment and the satellite environment. All right?
So DA probably was the peak of the richest period in rock and roll history.
Yeah, of youth culture, radical culture, rebellion. I mean, it ended with, supposedly, the Nixon victory in November 68. So it was the last gasp. I mean, even the hippies in 67, they had the death of the hippie funeral wake in San Francisco in October 67 after the Summer of Love, because they saw the media hijacked the whole movement. And when you look at imagery back then, it's really tiny, really tame, and kind of simplistic. The images of a few hippies gathering or a few black power people or a few student rebels. Back then it seemed powerful, but in retrospect it was just tiny. It was obviously inflated by television.
Yeah. Would you say television was art form at that point?
Yeah. If it's moving into... that's actors. Underneath Shem Shaughnessy you see actors, retrievals, and interiorization. When something's interiorized, it's becoming conscious and becoming programmable or an art form. You're starting to play with the dynamics of it. You're not inside and unknowing and involved in it. You actually can look at it. For example, when painting came in, when photography came in the 19th century, the eye medium of painting had to relook at what they were presenting on the canvas. So they changed the meaning of the eye, and they started to analyze vision itself and its dynamics. And then you moved into Impressionism, Fauvism, Cubism. What comes after Cubism? Abstract Expressionism. You know, the playing with the eye, because no longer is society hidden inside the eye in the Gutenberg phase.
Mm-hmm.
And the photograph has transcended the eye, and in terms of representation or realism, it can show something with starker high-definition detail than a painting.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the TV canvas starts to be played with. And it actually, because TV in the 50s was a ground medium, therefore mass security was very careful what got on it. They eventually killed live TV. But by the late 60s, television now becomes a medium that's played with. And so in Western culture, usually when it starts to be played with, it starts moving into the shocking countercultural traditions. So TV started to wake up the minorities, the fringe groups.
Mm-hmm.
And that caused great fascination. And little did the Black Power guys or the student activists or the SDS or the hippies or the radicals in Europe or the Children's Crusade in China, none of these groups knew that their manipulation of television would be a passing fancy, and that the effects that would surface in the 70s due to the satellite environment and what came after that, they would have to adjust to those effects that were the real revolution, not any bureaucratic hijacking that the chemical bodies thought they were doing.
Mm-hmm. And would you say the global theater awareness begins with probably around Sputnik in 57?
Only for the intelligence elites. It doesn't become an awareness till 68. When you have the yippie phrase at the Democratic Convention in Chicago, the whole world is watching. Therefore, if the whole world is watching, it's not just a village, you're on stage.
Yeah.
So that's what 68, and you notice McLuhan starts writing about the global theater in the summer of 68. He immediately saw what was going on. Other people didn't see it. They just felt it. And they were thinking of television as the theater. They didn't know that satellite was causing it. And when you get into the next phase...
Well, it's the mixture of the television and the satellite. If you didn't have the television, the satellite couldn't do it by itself.
Well, McLuhan suggests that just the awareness of this extension of the planet obsolesces nature. So the ecology movement is born through Rachel Carson and other people. And that is having an effect on people through the 60s, aside from the effect of Western bureaucratic radicals. In other words, the images of the 60s, the late 60s that seemed to be tumultuous of the Black Power, the riots in the city, and the students, and the drug taking, and the sexual revolution—all those things—they are only one tiny part of the effect of the satellite. You have corporations changing their policies. You had actually Nixon redesigning his platform, running for president, advocating participatory democracy. All right. So
mm-hmm.
You don't just look at the sensationalistic TV as art form images for the effects of the economy. I mean, you're starting to move the gold off as an economic standard in 1968. London starts to loosen up on gold as a fixed exchange standard.
And when does Nixon takes us off?
Takes office in January 69.
Mm-hmm. No, but he takes us off the gold standard when?
In August 15th, 1971, is when he starts floating the exchange rates.
Mm-hmm.
So that, or floating the dollar in relation to them. So the breaking up of that began in 68 in London with the gold pool.
Well, the combination of the satellite and the laser beam has really begun to emphasize the hologram or the... And that conjures up the idea of the global theater as being we're inside of a hologram.
Right, and that's by 73, 74, you got P.K. Dick and Robert Anton Wilson hallucinating that they're making contact with some E.T. force. And Dick at the time is writing about the world being a hologram for the last 2,000 years run by the Vatican or Rome, you know that scenario?
Yeah.
And then his Valus concept. He's actually absorbing the effect of the satellite and not noticing the next phase, holopathic cliche probes, which is not one big hologram. That would fit with the global theater idea. And television is the stage for the global hologram. But the hologram was fragmenting, becoming fractalized and miniaturized by the digital technology that's sneaking up past the satellite.
Right. So instead of being a global theater, it's more fragmented global theaters, plural?
Yes, or global put-on. Global put-ons, not just operating against the establishment. It's every institution is witnessing a rebellion and fragmentation and decentralization, not just politics.
Mm.
So, I'm not going to go into that right now, but let's just continue here. So you see in the holopathic cliche probes,
So say more about, so we have a singular global theater, and then that begins to fragment into holopathic, which is like small global, like the whole global theater shrinking, but it's also splitting up into multiples of itself, I guess.
Yeah, it's like the niche marketing phenomenon that was named in the 80s, demographics marketing. You have people putting on different audiences.
Mm.
Different institutions. I mean, concept art is running supreme by 1970, but sneaking up on it is photorealism.
When did they start with the Nielsen ratings?
I think the 30s and 40s.
Oh, okay. Because right there with the Nielsen ratings, you're already beginning to, they're already probably beginning to identify demographics.
Right. But it's more like a brand consciousness. But not the way we call brand consciousness today. But in the Nielsen ratings, 30s, 40s, it's a unified mass audience, right? It's not niche marketing.
Why do you even need a Nielsen ratings if you know everybody's on the same bandwidth?
Ah, that's because you need a centralized image that seemed to bespeak authority. So McLuhan said that the Nielsen ratings were Big Brother.
Oh, yeah.
Orwell didn't see this. So that the idea that there was some standard place...
You wanted to attune the global theater to the... You wanted to keep the public fascinated, so you had to find out where their head was at so that you could tune the global theater to their head or something.
Right. And to the effects of what was happening around... So that it was a simpler time. It was one-way broadcasting. The Nielsen ratings start to fragment by the 80s as an authoritative medium of... It's like a gold standard. Just as the gold standard fractured and the dollar standard fractured, so did the iconography of the advertising world and the control of who gets the Oscars and who gets the top-rated...
Well, cable TV comes in around the early 70s.
Yeah, cable TV is, I think it's running good by 74, 75.
Yeah, so that's offering more...
That's the medium of fragmentation of the hologram.
Yeah.
Global hologram.
So I'm still... I don't think I've asked the right question because I'm still not sure I know what you mean by holopathic cliche probes.
What that means is the breaking up of the global hologram.
Into what?
Into multi-holograms.
Well, such as?
FM radio. And you just let's take the music industry in the 70s. You've got AM radio, you've got FM, you've got the punk movement sneaking up. You've got disco sneaking up, and that's by 74, 75. They all peak in the late 70s. But in the music industry, you have a fragmentation happening to different kinds of audiences. So the
Technologies or the mediums of the global theater before the fragmentation? Would it be the mix, what you called, or what Bob Marshall called the mixed corporate media, the mixture of the radio, television, satellite?
Yeah, that's the content of the satellite.
Mm-hmm.
Mixed corporate media was a phrase that I would use in the late 80s because that's the post-satellite situation where satellite was the framework, the ground. In the 60s, satellite is the framework, and the other media are the actors, the older media. So that another example of decentralization, Hollywood is having a problem in the late 60s, that people aren't coming to their movies. For some reason, it's just the Nielsen ratings and the focus groups and trying to figure out what the people are interested in got totally smashed by a marginal group around Dennis Hopper, and that was the movie Easy Rider.
Mm-hmm.
So that Easy Rider brought in Coppola and what's called the golden age of movies of Hollywood and of those directors in the 70s. That was a fragmentation of the consolidated Hollywood control. So the youth culture...
Well, Easy Rider showed the confrontation of the new kind of hippie culture versus the more redneck culture.
Yeah, the corporate or straight culture.
Yeah.
So you have the breakup in music. I mean, a guy like Frank Zappa could not have happened in the early 60s. He could happen during the time of FM radio.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, McLuhan writes about how FM radio killed the hippie movement. And it comes in 67, 68, because music and literature and books could start hijacking the FM radio.
I remember when the FM bandwidth, I was just probably 9 years old when the FM bandwidth was first getting turned on. And I remember there were like a couple, three stations, and they had a list of about 30 or 40 songs that were played in rotation and with station identification occasionally. And it was that was totally programmed.
That's Top 40 radio.
No, Top 40 was more AM. This was more the newer
FM culture.
Yeah, it was the newer, hipper rock bands, the Steppenwolf, and the bands that were a little raunchier than the Top 40, a little more.
They had their own hierarchy.
Yeah, they were more tougher, Easy Rider type vibe. But you know, the Jefferson Airplane and the White Rabbits and all those. And the Buffalo Springfield, those protest songs, and Joni Mitchell. But still, they had, like, I remember when they first turned on the FM, they had, like, a string of about 30 of these songs, and they just had them on a loop, and they just played them 24 hours. They just played the loop 24 hours a day until they started to figure out, you know, how to hire DJs and how to work the new media.
And then it got looser, you're saying, after that?
Well, then they started to, once they brought the disc jockeys in, then, you know, the disc jockeys were trying to build audience. They were competing with each other to build audiences.
So the programming diminished as the computerized programming diminished as people started to hoik their personalities up?
Yeah, and then begin to listen to the audience and begin to go on their own intuition or their own... ability to pick songs that format, you know, create new formats, build an audience. But I remember when the FM station was first turned on, like I say, there were a couple of stations, and all they did was they had, like 30 songs on a loop, and they just played the loop over and over and over with occasional station IDs, and then they started to...
Now, you were in L.A. at the time, and you were... Even though you were only 9 or 10, you saw that pattern.
Yeah.
Did it bother you?
No, I liked the songs that they were playing. I thought it was peculiar that it was just a tape loop. It was really the feeling of the I don't know if you would call it the Android meme, but it was really the feeling, I guess, of the programmed or the there was no human being. There was just a loop, an endless loop of these songs that were playing over and over in the same order. You know.
So you got here radio, which is really obsolete, and it was obsolete. Sidelined a bit by television, but it reinvigorated itself by starting the rock and roll youth market. Okay, now that's a subset of the global hologram in the middle 60s. But then, when FM came in, you could fragment the radio subset itself into different groups, and that's what FM culture represents. So what is the hippie culture going to organize, change, bring peace to when they're being hijacked by the natural evolution of radio into another level of expanded market with FM radio? You know, you see, there's the media dynamic being the actor, not the humans thinking that the bands represented some humanistic or spiritual revolution or something.
FM allowed for the longer format. You could play the whole Light My Fire, all 22 minutes of it, or however long it was. On AM, you had to cram it down into a 3.5-minute segment with commercials in between.
So as you move more into an affluent leisure society, at least in North America, people had a lot more time on their hands, so that felt the need. That responded to the fill-in. Radio allowed itself to stretch out and take a longer toke.
Yeah.
So anyways, the holeopathic is the fragmentation of the older major media groups, all the media groups before the satellite and laser beam on my chart.
What is an example of one particular holeopath? Give me three holeopathic cliche probes and tell me what the composition of each one was.
Okay, so I've given you Hollywood. That's the Dennis Hopper innovative auteurs that came in with Easy Rider. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We have FM music. That's two. Let's see. Something.
Yeah, but that's... But
that's movies and radio.
Movies and
older media.
Right.
They're fragmenting. And the demographics are splitting up so people can make money. I mean, the majority of Americans didn't go to Easy Rider, but there was a whole youth market there.
See, I would think if the global theater was a mixed corporate media, a mixture of the radio, television effect, satellite effect, all creating a single hologram, then when we get to the holeopathic cliche probe, we have new global theaters made up of the alchemy of all three or four or five media components.
Yeah, the media components are the cliche probes. They're older media recycled for new fragmented audiences.
Yeah.
And it's a probe because it actually creates a new temporary fad, quote, revolution.
But if we have, in the global theater time, if we have a Matrix, which is a mixed corporate media or a mixture of radio, television, automobile, and computer creating a matrix. Now, when we get to the holeopathic cliche probe, we don't have two matrices, each composed of a mixture of radio, television, computer, satellite. Because when you say, well, we have one that was radio, we have one that was movie, but that's not a full matrix. That's just a piece of a matrix.
Oh, no, you can start to see the sentimental or almost religious investment in the beginning of this kind of celebrity culture. I mean, it was a big deal that the Beatles broke up. It was a big deal that the Jefferson Airplane had problems in the early 70s about their statement on the revolution. I mean, people really, this is when pop magazines...
this is when we had a really big divide between this was when the generation gap was probably at an all-time high.
Right, and
you had a mixed corporate media for the establishment. You had a mixed corporate media for the hippie subculture.
That's right, and so there was beginning a split in the subculture. People taking different media platforms. So you had the movie guys, you had the radio guys, you know, Dennis Hopper.
But that's what, to some degree, what drove the youth movement revolution was the fact that you had such a huge divide between the establishment and the youth movement could create its own mixed corporate media matrix bubble to live inside of, which was totally disidentified from the establishment mixed corporate media bubble, and so they clashed.
Within, well, no, but I'm saying there was a clash within the subcultures. The homeopathic cliche probe. So there was a battle between the beatniks, the hippies, and the yippies.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had the straights, and you had the hard hats. And then you had people, the Jesus movement started then. A lot of people were leaving and going to India, or they were going into fundamentalist Christianity. There were all kinds of cults showing up. I would say the cult phenomenon, the Moonies and other kinds of things like that, Scientology, represent another part of fragmentation of religion. Now, let's look at Vietnam. Vietnam starts falling apart. And this is laid out in the movie Apocalypse Now. By the early 70s, Vietnam as a platform for a battle between capitalism and communism, all within the global hologram, starts to lose its direction, starts to not know which battle it's fighting against, because you got all these other battles happening in the larger media environments of radio, movie, computers, and television. So so what happens is the CIA fragments, HCE fragments, and you start having gangs, Team A or Team B, as they were later called, setting up their own dope smuggling and arms smuggling and arms trading networks. You have a fragmentation right in the HCE zone. So you move it into another part of life.
Yeah.
And then also business is having a problem all over the world, and Japan is going to start sneaking up in the car culture.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you have the oil crisis of 73. So you could do an inventory of the instant replay changes sports. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So you could go through a lot of institutions and show the fragmentation of what McLuhan called civil wars going on all over the place. And that's because new, smaller media platforms allowed people to create their own audience.
Yeah, their own...
But they're creating an audience, which is a probe, in a world where, under satellite conditions as defined by McLuhan, there is no Amora audience. So you're creating temporary fake audiences, and the audiences know that they can participate, and they're hankering to get into any of those older media. Those older cliche platforms. And so part of the decentralization is more and more people do get into media. More and more music is made. I remember Dylan saying that in his Rolling Stone interview in 69. He said, what's good about today is more and more people are playing music. It was easier, cheaper to get amplified instruments.
Yeah. Every kid, including myself and all the guys I knew, were in some kind of a garage band, whether they were ever got anything on the radio or not was probably a moot point.
Yeah.
But they would, you get your garage band, and if you practiced, 10 or 15 times, you'd go play a couple parties, play the school dance, or what have you.
You did that.
Yeah.
What instrument did you play?
I played guitar.
Okay. So another thing that's coming in is the miniaturized TV camera, the video cam.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
well, then that brings in the MTV movement.
Well, that's not till 10 years later. Video art comes in with Vito Acconci and these people in 69, 70, 71 in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Harold Channer was part of that. He was one of the, I think he said he was the third to get a camera from Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
One of the, whatever that first camera was. Nam June Paik got the first one, and he became a famous video artist. He's the one McLuhan talks about. He got in there sort of like the first. But Channer was part of this gang here in New York City around the Howard Wise Gallery that started to present video with its bland, silly, odd content as an art form. And that fragmented the art world, whether that was art or not.
Yeah. That wasn't a mass media, though. That was something you'd go to see at a museum if you were hip and cool and were into that kind of thing. But it wasn't on the street, every street corner, like a Free Press.
Oh, no, but that's what happened. Art museums, small galleries popped up everywhere in New York City and in the bigger cities.
Mm-hmm.
There was a most of the baby boomer experience has been people taking advantage of decentralized media platforms and making a go at it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what, you know, Dennis Hopper in film with Easy Rider, Zappa in radio, Andy Warhol in art. Warhol was only, he was kind of famous for his Campbell suit cam, but he, I've read some stories about him showing up at the Lincoln Center Film Society in 69-70, and he's kind of looking, this is after he's been shot, he's looking for what to get into next. I mean, the kind of painting and stuff he's doing in galleries is obsolete. You're now full-fledged, any medium can be an art form. So he starts Interview Magazine. He starts a magazine, and then that gives him access to the celebrity culture and high society of the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So he started a new gallery. His gallery was the magazine Interview.
Mm-hmm.
So even a guy like that, who was famous in the early 60s, was under pressure to adapt to the media dynamics by the late 60s. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then to, I don't know if this is relevant or not, it sort of further, in my mind, complicates the whole alchemical mixture here. If you take a look at the Enneagram, which Gurdjieff salvaged from ancient Sufi and Indian culture, you know, you find out that... that
there are nine of them, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That, now remember, there's nine charts, nine levels on my chart here.
Okay, yeah.
There's a bit of Gurdjieff... on the symbolic level, each phase is an Enneagram.
Right.
You could take the characteristics of each Enneagram, see if you can match them up to each level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, anyways, you were saying about the Enneagram.
Well, I'm wondering if different identity types within the Enneagram, the nine different types, would gravitate towards different mixed corporate media matrix type.
Yeah, no, they would. Andrew and I, when I was there in New Zealand in December, we were toying with making a new astrological chart with new media signs,
mm-hmm.
not just first nature signs like in astrology, which I had, was working on in the early 90s, but I shelved that, and we worked on it a bit, and it came to a few problems, but that idea seems to come up, but already... demographic niche marketing is doing that, profiling different personality types,
mm-hmm.
and in marketing either a Paul Krasner or a Rush Limbaugh or Howard Stern to different kinds of personality types.
Right.
And so that happens more and more as you get into the 80s and 90s. So that's more and more audiences with older media creating new cliche probes, and these things in themselves don't cause revolutions, but the mixture of all of them happening is the new art form, what McLuhan called a rapid series of innovations as ersatz or fake anti-environment.
Mm-hmm.
That's important. Homeopathic cliche probes refers to that process.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's say in the television airplane Nixon phase, what's happening with... movies and radio and telephone and automobile, are they being mutated by the television and airplane dynamic in the Nixon era?
They're being hacked. It's the captain, whatever his name was, who created the method of hacking the phone booth,
mm-hmm.
phone system. He would broadcast through the phone, punching the signals, broadcast certain number of signals into the network, and you could get free use of the phone. And when that was written up by Ron Rosenbaum for some magazine in the early 70s, that inspired Bill Gates or Steve Jobs. I'm not sure which one, maybe both. Who worked with Paul Allen? I can't remember. I think Paul Allen was inspired by that. No, that was Steve Jobs, right? Paul Allen. Not sure. But anyways, the point is the Jobs gang or the Gates gang was inspired by the phone hacker.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the idea that this mega, this huge environment, AT&T and the Bell telephone system, was it called Ma Bell in the States back then?
Mm-hmm.
That was something you, as an individual, couldn't interfere with. It was mm-hmm. a huge landscape. But suddenly, individuals could actually, like a satellite, come in and hijack that old environment and get some benefits in their terms from it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that inspires the digital creators.
Mm-hmm. So in the Nixon 68 television airplane alchemy, what are those energies doing to, say, the movies then? You just said what, you know, something about the telephone. What are those energies doing to the movies and the automobile? Are they having an effect on those older environments?
You see, in the Nixon era, it's television versus airplane. What is sneaking up on them is a surprising new cliche probes due to the satellite decentralization and global theater is older media, radio, Frank Zappa, movies, Dennis Hopper, telephone, the Captain Hacker.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So the older media are now causing new phenomena that the major combating images in media, television and airplane, aren't aware of and are superseded by.
They're superseded?
Yeah, because people in the 70s start getting bored with mass media. The baby boomer generation that grew up with it are bored with mainstream television. So they start focusing on making movies. And album mania takes over, people making concept albums. Now, what sneaks up in that period, 71, is Archie Bunker and Norman Lear's shows. So that was a new kind of fragmentation from the standard protocols of proper TV.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So by that time, TV itself is fragmenting.
Right. And the satellite and laser beam are there as in a contextual way. They're not really being noticed, but they're
being felt.
They're being felt, and they're massaging the television airplane and older media.
Well, they're causing effects in the elites, the HCE column.
Yeah.
And they are wrestling with what are they going to do inside this increasing global participation, a very democratic impulse in a sense, of everybody in all kinds of media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are we controlling here? Freedom of speech becomes a tiny issue. What is it that is going to be the iconic centralized gold standard of imagery known as the Nielsen ratings? What is the Nielsen ratings? At that time, in 69, McLuhan wrote a letter to Playboy saying that advertising is dead.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the new ground, the centralized backup that the Nielsen ratings and the audience research that advertising relied on was fragmenting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this becomes real obvious by the 80s. When you're well into the homeopathic cliche probe environment, which is the digital environment in popular parlance, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have digital technologies coming in, but they are shrinking their effect, which is not noticed, is to shrink the global theater and fragment it. At first, fractalize it, and then later anamorphize it, which is a more chaotic situation than the fractal.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're looking at Reagan in 1980, now television, which was the outsider medium in the Nixon situation, is now so rearview mirror, it becomes the establishment medium. So Reagan becomes the great TV president when nobody cared about television in terms of feeling what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And what becomes the anti-environment, the enemy medium, is the computer at atom bomb
mm-hmm.
in the Reagan era. And that's symbolized by the personal computer revolution with the famous January 84 Super Bowl ad by Apple.
Mm-hmm.
All right? The computer and the atom bomb are now becoming available through the digital homeopathic cliche probes as something to massage.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody imagined in the 60s that they would have in 20 years their own personal computer and have all the time they want with it. Whereas in the 60s, the scientists had to jockey just to rent computer time on the mainframe computers.
Yeah, and I guess the Cold War is peaking around 1980 with, you know, everybody's got 20,000 bombs pointed at each other.
Well, the Cold War disappears in the 70s. It's reinvigorated with the Reagan presidency. And we could look at that as the Cold War, which was originally caused by television when television was a hidden environment, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the American McCarthyites thought that communism was taking over America in the early 50s, and that was the subliminal effect of television. So now television comes back in and replays its archetypal modalities, the Cold War, and that's what Reagan represented. So Reagan wasn't really a fascist or a Nazi or a retrieval big brother. He was the figure, the anthropomorphic figure and content for the retrieval and facts of the old TV environment. In other words, TV was the medium for the Cold War, and so you're going to have the Cold War become an established pressure when TV is aligned, as Sean, with Issy, the president. And, of course, that fades out in 10 years.
Yeah.
So television evoked the Cold War in the Reagan era, not Reagan or anybody else.
Hmm.
And what's interesting is
it was the atom bomb, though, that everybody, that was what the Cold War was really about. It was that threat.
Yeah, the atom bomb comes in. Now, that's part of, that's the other twin, that's Shem. So the renewed fear of Russia's ability to bomb things, and Dr. Beter terms, with particle beam weapons and cosmospheres and the neutron bomb, all these things were refinements, fragmentations of the atom bomb ground, which was back in the Kennedy era. See, Reagan was seen as the neoconservatives' version of Kennedy, a charismatic image that the Democrats had in the 60s via Kennedy. But it's a totally different ground, and it's really not Kennedy or Reagan the people. It's the media mixture.
Yeah.
So the real dynamic, the real actors in the Kennedy era are the automobile versus the quark tune. In the Nixon era, television versus airplane. And in the Reagan era, computer and atom bomb versus television.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see Reagan is part of the Cold War, but who's his enemy? The atom bomb, which was... And the computer, which were not real enemies. The real enemy was the hidden ground of what?
Well, the holopathic cliche probes, which are little like mixed corporate media subsets, I guess.
And fragmenting and fractalizing and later anamorphizing. And so
what's the anamorphic effect here?
Trump Leal. Do you know what that is? Eye tricks, where the eye follows, like an M.C. Escher painting,
right,
and it goes into one perspective and then slips out of that, and it kind of doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Optical illusions, you could say.
Yeah. Well, I know that also the anamorphic effect is sort of like in fractals, even though everything's fragmenting, there's a certain symmetry to the fragmentation.
That's retrieved.
And with the anamorphic, there's a weird disassociation between components or parts, and the geometry is really kind of ugly. It's not symmetrical.
Proportional, so that you could see the anamorphic is an attempt to visualize tactility, which can't be visualized. But if you were going to visualize tactility, it would have to be quite distorted, because it would not, and in any way, go
your perceptual senses can't. They get twisted up trying to visualize it, I guess.
Something that's not a sense. But the tactility is being extended all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
In from the TV on, but especially in the holopathic cliche probes. So that even television as an early tactile medium, most people couldn't tell whether Reagan was acting or was asleep at the wheel or what. It was a very ambivalent, ambiguous image. He actually represented television's tactility. You couldn't pin him down to what he was.
Yeah, I remember, you know, you've pointed out on occasion how he used to just sort of come out, smile, wave at the audience, gesture as if, you know, hey, I'm here, we're here, everything's okay.
TV's still working.
TV's still working. But see, Reagan, to me, I get more of a sense of the Quark tune image when I think of Reagan, because he's kind of like a cartoon image. Much more so than Kennedy or Nixon.
That's what I meant. He is redoing Kennedy, but it's a different era, and he's the cartoon squared.
Mm.
You get it cubed in the later phases.
Mm.
So, yeah, he's cartoon squared, which I don't have on this chart, but I do have it on the other chart.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he's squaring that process, because all these previous media are embedded in this situation. But the main outlines, the main cartoon-bounding lines, the media that people can recognize themselves in are television versus computer and atom bomb.
Right. Now that I think of it, I don't know why you don't have television in the Kennedy quadrant, because, you know, we've discussed in the past, Kennedy was the first TV president that had charisma on that medium, and that may have been, his charisma was so pronounced in the TV media that it threatened other powerful forces.
Kennedy was riding on the TV image as it became figure.
And while it was still live.
Yes. Yes, I understand live TV ended in 65, so it's before. Now, the point of the cartoon, though, is that Kennedy represents old pre-tactile concerns. He wants to bring in universal peace or global peace and stop the Cold War. All these bureaucratic earlier 20th century concerns.
Mm.
And so the older concerns of the bureaucracies of 1900 and 1960 were now just cartoon outlines.
Mm-hmm.
And they were puny compared to what was really going on in the global theater. So they're small, like quarks, and they're a cartoon. And Kennedy was not aware of the effects of television that was happening all around him. He might be aware that he looked better on TV.
Well, television was giving him wattage, but it was his. But as content for television, he was hoiking up older concerns.
Yeah, he was the Disney culture attacking the mafia. He was the happy American consumer dream.
Yeah.
The theme park up against the increasing power of the mafia.
Which was the leisure set.
The what?
The leisure.
Yes, the mafia hijacked.
Gambling, casinos, prostitution, alcohol.
Yeah, all kinds of, and drugs. You know, marijuana, cocaine, heroin. They were taking advantage of the new leisure time that Americans had.
Mm-hmm.
So he was, and that is the automobile culture.
Yeah.
Remember, the Teamsters were controlled by the mafia, so the Teamsters are the unions, and that's steel and hardware.
Mm-hmm.
And the car world. And all
right.
The cars can carry.
Yeah.
Cars and contraband, yeah. You know.
But Kennedy's powerful because he's got the image for TV. He's got the cool TV presence.
Yeah, if he was smart, he would have said, my image on TV is too strong. I better tone down, use less TV, and therefore I won't threaten the old HCE Big Brother gang and won't get assassinated.
Yeah. But do you remember, I remember Rupert Sheldrake did these experiments where he noticed that on live TV broadcasts, performers would get juiced by the fact that they were absorbing the attention of hundreds or thousands of people who were focusing their attention on that event. It would bring the event alive and make electricity crackle in the air around, and the performers could feel it. And Kennedy probably probably drew power from having that much attention focused on him in the morphogenetic fields, you know, being created by the focused television cameras on one person.
Yeah, now look at the morphogenetic field as the TV audience, the discarnate, unified, one-way mass medium. But what was breaking that up was the satellite. So, yes, by the time that TV becomes conscious, people, they get energized by it. But they don't know that the audience is rapidly disappearing. as they get into fragmented media or get into smaller demographics and actually become participants themselves.
Well, maybe that begins to answer my my next question, is which is, how the hell did Nixon get elected, since everybody after TV, after Kennedy, has to project in the TV landscape, and Nixon was a hot image in a cool medium. He didn't have a TV presence, but so then, you know, like, how did he get to be the next TV president after Kennedy? Maybe partly because the satellite was breaking up the TV effect.
An airplane. The airplane now has moved into jet travels. Now moved into into the Sean position.
Yeah. And
so the airplane got voted in.
Why does Nixon represent? Now, he doesn't necessarily resonate with the airplane, other than the fact that he brings in the airplane to prop up his alchemical image.
Yeah, he's the
by hyping up Vietnam War.
The airplane is the outer global village medium. Television is the inner global village medium.
Yeah.
So the outer and the inner, the hippies versus the straights, is what's going on. And the straights, for whatever reasons, that's a demographic, they identify with the airplane. And they want the TV cleaned up. Remember, the Democratic Convention, you saw it in the Allen Ginsberg documentary, that Ginsberg later said that Nixon got in because of the riots at the Democratic Convention.
Mm-hmm.
So the TV agenda that the hippies thought they were going to implement, or the yippies with Abby Hoffman and them, didn't work. It backfired.
Oh, because they were sucking power. They were too busy fighting the Democrats, the Democratic minds. That they were.
They were fighting the airplane mentality. Vietnam.
Yeah, but also, there was some linkage there to that they didn't like the direction that the Democratic Party was going. So they were basically fighting the Democratic Party, which was sucking power out of it, which left Nixon the only man standing in the Republican faction.
You could go into it that the yippies wanted a better TV image than Humphrey was offering.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted a TV image that de-emphasized the airplane and Vietnam War. They wanted sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
So let's. I think we've come to the end of this side.
Yeah.
End on that point.
Yeah. Okay. Let's take a break.